Thank you for coming back. Good evening, or good afternoon still. It's so dark.
Sun's coming out.
The sun is coming out now.
Spell up, the sun's coming out. Excuse me.
All right. Well, we had an opportunity to have a good conversation with Senate members. And, Mr. Chair, we have a counteroffer that we want to share with you. And in that counteroffer, we have a few items that were left pending, which we do not think that they are controversial, though they had... we had to make sure that they were incorporated. So what we attempted to do was to create kind of three categories for now. One addresses the repealers, and we'll go over that so that members are clear about what the repealers do. Then we go to the Article 3. Then we go to Article 6, Article 8. And then we will, we are listing at the end issues that are tied to fiscal appropriations for which we had, you know, we need to make a decision about basically sending those to our finance chairs due to the fact that these good proposals actually have fiscal implications. So I'm going to ask our staff to briefly go through that and help us make sure that we locate this language and make sure we know what it is. And having my binder would be very helpful.
Yes, that would help.
I don't have my binder with me. I just noticed that. My binder was on my desk. We're in the floor and we were having this meeting. I think all the members are aware that we are here.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, I just need to have my binder in front of me.
Okay.
Cool.
Diamond saw.
Anybody been outside lately? Is it raining?
Of course, raining. I mentioned that you have some time as far as getting your
sawdust. It's not in the other windows. I must have a hole up there.
They're wetting the rocks.
That's what I thought.
That's not rain.
That's what I was trying to produce. I go.
Oh, okay.
My kids' baseball games for sure.
Oh, my son's coaching today.
Did you like to see? The Twins have already lost a game today. Recruiting.
You showed that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask our staff to walk us through this list. If Anne-Marie and Buren can just go through it, help me and members kind of locate this language so that we know what we're talking about, and then we can begin to present some motions. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, the first section is in Article House Fire Article 2. It's the repealers, and it's House Section 3. It's on R2A2.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a list of repealers. Members, if you don't have it, let us know. They have been kind of put together separately so that you can take a look at them. Do you all have the list? Do you need it? You don't have the list?
Do you want me to?
You want?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. Okay.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate, then I would certainly make a motion to adopt House File Article 2. Let me make sure I'm doing this right. I may need staff just to make sure, but it would be adopting the language in House File Article 2, Section 3, and this is the repealers that's in front of us at this point. Is that, looking at staff, looks like they're nodding, that would be the correct motion.
Okay. Any questions? If not, all of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Next we have House File Article 3.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members, then the next House File Article 3, Section 2. It's on R1-A3, and then there's amendment to that section. Let's see if I can find my pile.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the A28 amendment?
This is the A28 amendment.
Thank
That's
you.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I kept wondering. So, members, this is, we received some feedback this morning, and this particular amendment tends to correct some of those issues.
So, Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, just a procedural question. So up to now, what we've been doing is amending a section and then either adopting or not adopting that section as a second motion. So I just want to make sure that that's still the same procedure. And I don't know whose amendment this is, but it probably would be in order for whoever it is to move it, and then we can discuss it.
That is correct, Representative Mariani. So we're going to proceed with the same process that we adopted at the beginning of the conference committee, adopting amendments and then moving the actual section. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A28 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Clausen. Would you like to briefly explain, or would you like the staff to go over this, however you want to handle it?
I'll let the staff. I'll just make a few comments and let the staff. But this was a discussion that we had for students relating to the compulsory education law, and students that are between the ages generally of 16 and 17 are now required to attend until the age of 17. And there were some concerns about students that may have been expelled or excluded from school that are in that age bracket, or who may have some severe attendance problems. So we tried to include some language there, and then also trying to get some compromise language on how a student then is actually placed in consultation with a principal and parent and student in an AOC setting. And I'll let council then add any other additional comments.
Thank you, Senator Clausen. Any additional comments from the staff? Representative Bly, feel free to come and let us know what your opinion and if you have any feedback.
Does the department want to take?
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Chair. Yes, we have come to agreement on this amendment, and it does take care of the issue, the primary issue that we had with the word assigning students to our programs, and uses the word referral and referred as opposed to that. We still have, I think, some discomfort, but I am recognizing that in the best interests of the two bodies coming together, we do want to try to work together. I appreciate the work that Roger Aronson did with me on the amendment, and I think we both indicated that this is something maybe we need to work further on in the future, but we can both live with this language at the present time. I just wanted to reiterate, I think that our concern is that when we struggle with students who have even problems of truancy and may be expelled, if we don't look at the deeper causes or the problems that may be outside of school that are causing these issues, and if you did look at some of those issues, you might not need to have a student move to a different school. And so looking at those conversations that need to happen about should we refer, should we have a student go to a different program, that those things can happen. And I think this makes that possible. And also, if there's discomfort about the change in compulsory law that the Principals Association has, that they have a way to deal with that, they have a way to look at that problem, and I think that's important. So, I just think that the conversation was good. I think we both learned from where our positions were, and I appreciate the patience of the committee for letting us work it through.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. And you have our commitment to continue to work on this issue. Really, I think this is a very good conversation to have and a lot of information that we need to obtain in order to figure out how these issues are affecting really a large number of kids that we care very deeply about. So we will continue to work on this, and thank you for initiating the conversation. I know Mr. Anderson is there, but Senator Johnson has a question. Senator
yes,
Johnson.
And maybe Senator Clausen can answer, or anyone at the table. When you say, and only if in the school administrator's professional judgment, is the school administrator.
Is there only one school administrator in a district?
If I could answer that. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Johnson. I think the intent there is to recognize that both the school, the home school, and the Alternative Learning Center have administrators, and it should be the best judgment of either administrator that's looking at this issue. So, I think if there's some ambiguity there, but I think that's okay. I think that we want to make sure that this is the, in their judgment, this is the best outcome.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, I would be more comfortable if it was listed as the principal of the school, because I would presume the principal is the person who's deciding that that child can't go to or is looking for some alternative in the regular school program, and that what would happen if the principal came to the Area Learning Center administrator and the Area Learning Center administrator said, no, this person doesn't fit in this. So now that administrator has said no. What would happen then to the child?
Representative Bly.
I think that the intent is that ultimately the decision should be with the parent and the child, and we look for other options. And there, it may force the issue that we need to look for other options than that. I think that the decision is advised by both administrators, and certainly the administrator initiating the referral would be the principal at the school where the student was. I think I don't think there's any question about that. But you want to make sure that you have a full discussion about, including with the parent and the student, what's best.
I don't think Senator Johnson is fully convinced. I am not fully convinced either.
I would be more comfortable if it said the principal at the in that school would be. But okay, I'll think about it.
Especially since it says "and only if," but Representative Moran.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm wondering, since Mr. Aronson is part of the language agreement, if he can also take a crack at that, Senator Johnson's question regarding, the language administrator.
So, Mr. Aronson, if you could help us briefly.
Madam Chair and members, I think the overall answer that's important in Senator Johnson's question is that the child is going to be somewhere. Our system is currently designed that nobody can be put out on the street. So if they're not going to get in the ALC, then they're going to come back to the school or they're going to go into one of the other programs here. And I think the reason that the answer isn't as clear as you would like it or any of us would like it, and Representative Bai has significant experience being an ALC director, is we work on these placements sometimes for some place to put, to have the kids be or attend school, whatever language you're comfortable with. But I do think it's important that you know that no one is going to be without educational services. And our system actually works that way all the way around. If they're expelled, we still have to provide educational services to them, until they're 18. So, and there are sometimes, and I think that this fits in this, why we need to have some of this flexibility. The ALC doesn't have any room. They're full. And so then we have to figure out other ways to handle this as well. I know that happens from time to time as we work with that. So we worked on this language a bit, and actually the question that you're raising, the two of us talked about this yesterday, and I'm comfortable that the professionals handling where these kids are going to be for their educational services will work with this language. The language isn't completely executing, but that's okay. I mean, these are professionals that are going to make these decisions, and that's why the professional judgment language was added into this. And I think it is important. Representative Bly's concern was that this would limit the option of where the child could go was to the ALC, and that's why we picked up this other language on the bottom that says the intent was not to limit this just to ALCs. And when you go into 124D68, there are several other programs that are referenced in there, everything from contract alternatives to PSEO to online learning and other programs as well. So I agree that it and I think Representative Bai would acknowledge this too, that there's a little bit of openness here, but we think that's going to work well for us in working with these kids. I wanted to say one thing before we left this too, the other night when we testified. I mean, what we're doing here is we are going to have some kids come that at first blush they may not think they should be in an ALC. And one of the other lobbyists made a point with me that said, sometimes kids don't think they should go for treatment either, but they need to go to treatment. And sometimes, as the education professionals, we have to help guide them into some of these programs. And I think that this language makes a much better statement of that standard than what we had put in place last year. So we're very pleased with it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. So I have Representative Yaruso, I have Senator Clausen, I have Senator Johnson, and I have Representative Ertl. So, Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not every district operates in the same way, and so I'm not certain what the situation is currently in St. Paul, but I know, at least for a time, that none of the high schools were considered neighborhood schools. Everything was considered a program that you applied to. And when I was student teaching, we had a kid who just wasn't there anymore for a month, and he was actually formally disenrolled by the district. And then the family came back because they actually were out of the country. Well, so now you have a student who, you know, has been truant for a month, and you don't actually have a home place necessarily. In his case, he just came back. But, you know, if that had been somebody who had ongoing issues, you might not necessarily, in some of those situations, or if they've been in a magnet program or who knows what, that they might not have a home school where they automatically would fall back in. So I think the flexibility is good. You know, you could flesh it out with, you know, principal and or whatever, but I don't think that would change really the effect of it. It's just leaving it the way it is.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think at the heart of this issue is what's best for the student, what's the educational setting that'll be best for them. And when you're having a discussion about an area learning center placement, what currently is existing is not working for that student for whatever reason. And I think the important thing is, and you look at the setting, what will work for that student. And I think, as Mr. Arneson said, sometimes the student may not know what's best for them, but working with the parent and working with other professionals, I think the outcome is always going to be what's a setting that's going to work for the student. So
absolutely.
That's
Thank
an
you.
Important thing.
Senator Johnson.
Can you just talk, Madam Chair? And,
Senator Johnson, you need your microphone.
Mr. Arneson.
Could
tell me what are the options if a okay I'm sorry if a student is having problems in the regular school and then they can't and they don't get it they can't stay in the area learning center, which I remember correctly, the area learning centers were put into place to deal with children who couldn't function very well in the regular school. But what if they can't get into the area learning center? Then what happens to them? What's the next step? What does the school do?
Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, as I said earlier, the default is going to be their K-12 school. I mean, the district has to provide educational services to them. So we're going to tailor a program to work for them in some particular way. And I do think it's important, and Representative Yaruso raised this the other night, this language is now tailored that when you see on 1.5 and 1.6, this only applies to children that have been expelled or who are chronically truant. It no longer picks up the pregnant kids and the mental health issues and kids that are just generally behind or those sorts of things. So this is a pretty narrowly targeted. But there are a lot of options that we work with on kids and alternative programming. The larger districts have alternative schools in them. Anoka actually has a school that deals just with kids that have expulsion issues, that they have their own expulsion disciplinary type high school. And we do homebound education, we do online learning programs. For some kids, it's just simply open enrollment to another district. So there are a wide range of options that happen in terms of those educational services. But we make it very clear with the school principals that the district does have an obligation to provide services to these kids. And that's your policy, that you don't want them on the street or that they're not being served. And you don't want them served in the criminal justice system. You don't want them served in the mental health system. You want them served in the K-12 system.
Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arneson, just a couple of questions. You made a comment alleging that or alluding to that a program would be could be full.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a and Representative Swatsky was asking this question as well. Is there a cap? I wasn't aware that there was a cap on alternative learning programs.
Representative Black.
There are times when there just isn't the capacity to take another student. And at different times, area learning assisted alternative programs have had waiting lists where it's not really a cap necessarily, but you only have so many seats. You have only so many places where you can put kids. And there have been times when we put kids on waiting lists or waited until we could get them or tried to talk with what other options are available for a student and try to look at it that way. So I wouldn't say that there is a ceiling, but there are times when just the capacity isn't there to take another student.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Earle.
Thank you. Appreciate the answer to that. Just another unrelated question here, I guess. In the amendment, and maybe you touched on this before, but the district administrator's professional judgment or the school administrator's professional judgment, that line there. School administrators. Mr. Aronson, is there a definition of a school administrator? What I'm getting at is could an athletic director be making a decision along these lines? No offense to my son, but I don't know if I'd want him doing that.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, the answer to that is no. Athletic directors are not licensed administrators. In fact, there is no license for those folks. This would be, and when we say school administrators, these are going to be superintendents, school principals, special ed directors technically would fall into that, but and actually the fourth one on the licensed administrators is community ed. Those are the four, and those all fall under the jurisdiction of the Board of School Administrators. So that's who would be doing that, and I think that the kind of and obviously our special ed directors, I'm sorry, our ALC directors have those licenses. A lot of the ALC directors have principal licenses. That's very, very common. So those would be licensed school administrators is the reference here. That's the intent of the statute.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that there was a definition.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I think that was very helpful, actually, Representative, because I wasn't sure either. So that was very a good question. Okay, members, I think we are ready to adopt the amendment. Any other questions? If not, all of those in favor of the 828 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. So we need to move that section now. If I need a member to offer that section.
Madam Chair, I'll Representative offer Bryan. House Section 2 as amended. Article 3.
Any questions? If not, all of those in favor of that signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. It's adopted. Next in the agenda, we have the Charter School Building Lease Aid, which is House Section 41, and we have an amendment. So hopefully the amendment clarify some language that was not clear in the proposed language. Lisa, if you could check and see if this is the right amendment.
No, thank you.
Because we had, I understand that there was a lot of work that went into this, so we had several versions.
Yeah.
This is good? Okay. So this is the 892 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Representative Briani.
Madam Chair, I would move the 892 amendment.
Okay, Representative Briani moves the 892 amendment. Members, do you have any questions about this amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative, could you go over that so that you tell us a little bit about what this
does? I'll ask for help from House staff on this as well. But, you know, essentially this this language will make sure that whatever or the actions that we took last year for this year, so effective date going prospectively forward, that all charter schools would be in conformance with that policy frame. I mean, that's essentially it. I would turn to Ms. Larson if there's anything I need to add to it, but it's an issue that gets incredibly complex, but I think the issue that was before us was wanting to make sure that all charter schools would be prospectively going forward in conformance with the policy changes that were made last year.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? If not, all of those in favor of that motion of adopting the A92 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted. Now we need to move Section 41.
Madam Chair, I would so move adoption of House Section 41, Article 3, as amended.
Thank you. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. The motion is adopted. Next in the list, we have the P20 system alignment, which is Senate Section 27.
Sure.
Representative Briner.
Could we have some context for the discussion in which this was moved in the Senate? What is what the goals of the bill are, I see the language, but because of my own work with assessment and career pathways in the last few years, I'm interpreting this language in a context, and I don't know if it's the right context. So I'm wanting to have some input on the bill as it moved through the Senate.
Pages are not.
It's R53,
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Dahl.
I think the notes I have, this must have been a bill that was in Senator Wieger's bill. So I don't remember the context either, but is that also that little piece sitting in finance as well?
Yes.
Okay. But that's all I can tell you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moran.
Madam Chair, and I do recognize that this is sitting in the finance bill, but my understanding is that it has no fiscal implications, so I think we're not, at least technically or procedurally, we're not doing something that we're trying not to do in other provisions as well. I'm just wondering if perhaps maybe the department can quickly just tell us a reminder of what the P20 is. And whether or not those P20 meetings are, public, are they hidden meetings, what kind of very generally, what the scope and expectation of the P20 has been, how it tends to operate. This is very heavy, but just sort of a reminder for us.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the P20 Council is a council that goes across grades pre-K through.
Can you tell us?
Well, I'm sorry, Rose Hermanson with the Department of Education. It is a joint council across systems. It includes the president of the University of Minnesota. The chairs transfers from between three different entities. The University of Minnesota, the president is chair. 2 years later, then the chancellor of the Minsky was chair, and then it transfers to the Minnesota Department of Education. Currently, the commissioner of education is the chair. They are assigned certain tasks, and they discuss a variety of issues interact with each other across the systems. And I think they meet generally four times a year. I think what you're directing them to do here under this provision is to maybe look at some ways to restructure across the systems and come back with some recommendations to the legislature. Earlier, you gave them some additional duties related to career and technical ed to discuss how we better use our joint activities as a council to make some recommendations about how to strengthen those activities across the system. But it's been in existence for a while, and that chair transfers among the systems, but as a way for them to communicate about issues that affect all of them.
And Madam Chair and
Representative Moriarty,
Commissioner, it is my understanding then that the P20 Council itself does not have authority to enact rule or law. Its function is to work collaboratively across these different systems to identify ways in which they could better collaborate. But relative to this conversation today, their authority is, if you will, is limited to issuing recommendations to the legislature.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. And it's a very, very beside the systems themselves. We have School Board Association, Board of Teaching, business individuals, higher ed individuals. It's a fairly comprehensive council. I can't remember because I think there's 30 to 40 members, but it's well representative of the state and people who are interested in education issues. And I think some of you have served on it.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for asking the question. I was trying to kind of refresh my memory. A lot of this conversation took place in finance in the Senate. So this was a good question for me. Please.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And that is helpful. You know, my concern about it was because of the other work, the assessment language from last session actually has already charged post-secondary and secondary are moving forward on some alignment tasks, and both the career pathways and technical education task force report has elements that actually address this very charge. But that being said, the P20 partnership is still an appropriate group to engage the conversation with awareness of those pieces in statute. So I don't have an issue with it. I just wanted the context for it. So thank you.
I think that was very helpful. Thank you for that. So moving back, Representative Moriarty would like to move the motion.
Chair, I will move adoption of the Senate file language in section 27, and that's Article 2, and that's on R53-83.
Article 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. So let me make sure I have the right motion. It's Senate Article 2. Right. Senate Article 2, Section 27.
Correct. That's right. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Next in the agenda, we have the transfer rules, House Section 50 as amended. Representative Moriarty.
Madam Chair, I believe Representative Russo and perhaps is it Senator Clausen are working on this, but I defer to them.
Is Representative Russo? Do we have an amendment? Okay,
yeah.
Sorry. I was trying to figure out if we have an amendment for that. I was trying to. We're not moving the section because we have an amendment on that issue. Sorry.
This is Article 4. That's why. Thank you.
I got it.
So maybe let me get back because we need to continue with the process the way we have been doing it before. So this is on the A93 amendment, which will amend that particular section. And Representative Yaruso, if you could please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. this is about the State High School League rules and the original text talks about students with IEPs or with 504s, and we had a discussion about the 504 plans, and we wanted to firm up that language a little bit rather than making it automatic. So the amendment says the league must establish guidelines consistent with this paragraph for reviewing the 504 plan of a student who transfers. So they'll be setting up guidelines, but it's guidelines for review, not guidelines for automatic inclusion.
Thank you. And I know Representative Yaruso, Senator Clausen work on the 504, the language related to the 504, which was of concern. So, Senator Clausen, is that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think with this, the important thing that this does is puts the students with the IEP and also 504 plans on an equal footing. They're going to be treated very similarly as far as going through a process to determine if the transportation or the transfer should take place. So.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so any questions on the amendment? I need a motion to move the A93. So Representative Geruso moves the A93 amendment. Any questions? All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
All right, so now we can move into adopting the House Section 50. If I could get a member to offer that particular motion as amended.
Madam Chair, I'll move Article 3, Section 50, House language.
As amended.
As amended.
All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Next in the list, we have the St. Louis County Board meetings, which is House Section 54.
Chair, I'm told that the
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm told that the map that speaks a thousand words is available for us to have.
So we better see the map. So as members recall, this was a provision to allow the board to have these meetings in this particular location. So,
Madam Chair, I will move that we adopt Senate 654 in Article 3.
Senator Johnson, there is someone who's dying to show us these maps, so we may as well give her a chance. We've worked on this map to make a point for a very long time, so we may as well talk about it. And it's in color, and it's laminated, and it's just beautiful. So we shall see this map. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My map bearer has left the room, so here am I with bearing the map. But fortunately, I do have it. Yes, we realize that
please introduce your name for the
tape. Let's see. I really don't want to. Denise, thank you so much. Denise Dietrich with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And this is a map of all the Minnesota school districts in the state of Minnesota. And if you, now if I can have a pointer, can I get a Vanna White here? You can see that St. Louis County is this large, and they have about 14 school districts surrounding this area. And as you can see, that Virginia is smack dab in the middle of the county. And so that just gives you some rationale for the reason for this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Yaruso.
Basically, the issue is that the St. Louis County School District is all the pieces of St. Louis County that aren't somewhere else. You know, so the parts of it that aren't in a city big enough to have generated its own school district. And that's what created this kind of island effect there.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay, so Senator Johnson moves House Section 54 of Article 2. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. We have another set of repealers that are Senate Section 29. We can kind of address that. I am not sure that we have a list like the one we did before, right? But Ms. Butler, if you could just help us kind of go through the important elements of those repealers.
Sure thing. Madam Chair, members, we need to make sure we don't adopt that section in its entirety. It contains two repealers, but we only want to adopt one because it would be in conflict with some decisions that the conference committee made earlier about amending a section that's in our repealer. But so what the remainder would be repealing section 121A.61 subdivision 2, and that's a career teacher staff development set aside of the staff development set aside, a portion of this.
Thank you. So in the list we clarify is only 122A61 subdivision 2 of section 29. So it's that particular provision for a repealer. So anyone would like to offer that motion, please?
Chair, I'll move that we repeal 122A.61 subdivision 2.
Thank you. On Senator Nelson's motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Next, we move into Article 6. This is House File Article 6, Senate File Article 5, Early Childhood Education, Self-Sufficiency, and Lifelong Learning. So this is related to the provision on early scholarship family eligibility on Section 2. Senator Dahl?
Madam Chair, I move Senate File Article 5. Senate Section 2.
Any questions? Representative Briner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we were looking at this language, we were wanting to know what happens when funds are no longer available to siblings who are eligible, and then when do they, you could say when funds are available, they'll be included, but that's very vague for the families in terms of any planning. So what would happen here in terms of the eligibility of siblings who would otherwise be eligible but funds aren't available?
Maybe we can ask the department and they are ready to answer. So, Mr. Courtney, you're fast. I just look around and you were just there, ready with the answers. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Darren Cordy with the Minnesota Department of Education. The funding is appropriated or is available at the beginning of each fiscal year, and since we are talking about a small percentage of the actual population need, that money gets, claimed pretty quickly in the fiscal year. So, by the time you get later in the fiscal year, if you were to have somebody who had a scholarship and all of a sudden, it had a sibling then, it had a sibling who was born, since this allows from 0 to age 5, we had a concern that if the money was already taken up, and this language was saying that there was a requirement that that new sibling would be eligible for a scholarship, that there would kind of be a conflict there between no funds being available for that scholarship but a requirement that they receive one. So that's why we had asked that it just say as long as funds are available. The way it would work, I think, is that in the next fiscal year then that child would then be counted as, funds would become available at the beginning of that next fiscal year, and then that sibling would be brought into the scholarship program.
Any follow-up question? Representative Mariani.
And then, Madam Chair, if Mr. Corti then could tell us about the other part of the language that identifies children who has already received a scholarship under this section and the ability to continue. If you could just explain, as long as funds are available, connection to that issue.
Mr. Cord.
Yep, Mr. Chair. I think this was to address. So this is for a child who was received. To be honest with you, I really don't think that we need this language. If the committee would be comfortable deleting it, I think that all of our scholarship students who are third grade student or who are third grade get eligible in fourth grade. I'm not sure why this was initially put in there by our early learning staff, but it's my understanding maybe we should just delete that language.
Thank you. We have some advice from staff, and then we'll proceed to see how
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering,
Mr. Beer,
what would happen if for some reason the legislature decreased the appropriation for early learning scholarships and fewer funds were available globally?
Mr. Chair, I guess that's, or Madam Chair, I think that's a bit of an administrative question, and I think that's something we would have to wrestle with at the agency, certainly. We want to make sure that, I think that research has shown that continuity is important with these scholarships, and if there was a student who had received a scholarship, we'd want to make sure that they continue to receive that scholarship. So I think that would probably take priority over bringing, you know, taking that student off of a scholarship and bringing a new three-year-old in. But again, that's kind of speculative. I think we'd have to weigh the pros and cons if that hypothetical situation were to occur.
Representative Moran.
Well, Madam Chair, and so then just sort of thinking a little bit out loud, to Mr. Arneson's question, then perhaps that language is helpful because then it says, you know, we're recognizing that, you know, the research tells us that continuity is important. And so as opposed to, you know, in a dire fiscal situation, we're going to, here's a marker that says as long as funds are available, if you've already received this scholarship, we want you at least to be able to continue to have that experience. Am I incorrect, you think, or correct in that?
No, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, I think that leaving that language in there might provide some flexibility if there were to be a situation like Mr. Arneson brought up. But, I mean, the way that we've been administering the scholarships is to keep that continuity between three-year-olds and four-year-olds until they get into kindergarten, so there's not a gap in their learning.
Maybe we should move too quickly to remove it for now.
Okay.
So the proposal before us is just to move Senate Section 2 of House File Article 6, Senate File Article 5. Any questions? Who moved that?
I think anyone moved it yet.
I need somebody to move it. So Senator Nelson moves.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt Section 2.
Any questions? No, we're not going to move that language. No, we're just going to move what is in the list. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, I just want to thank Senate staff for carving out into that area. I think that was a wise exploration.
Thank you, Representative. I know we're really surrounded by great people who can help us do this work well. Sometimes things that on the surface appear so simple, they aren't. So thank you for catching that so quickly. So then we move into House File Article 8, which is Senate File Article 9, which are part of the unsession changes. These are repealers only to those in common between House file and Senate file. So they are in both sides. If Ms. Butler can help us locate that, just briefly explain what that is. Ms. Butler.
Yes, Madam Chair, members. The changes are in the A8 article. So the sections are on R5-A8. In the House file side, it's Section 4. In the Senate file side, it's Section 5.
Oh, Ms. Larson, you have clarification? Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, the conferees are curious, on page 58 of the bill summary side by side, you can see what the different sections being repealed are. There's a list of them.
And just to the agreement is to just take the ones that are in common. So the House file has a repealer of 119A.08 that the Senate file did not carry, and the Senate file has a repealer of 122A.71 that the House file did not carry. So it would be one of those sections without the one that the other body did not have.
So again, members, these are only the repealers that were accepted in both houses that we're moving forward. Any questions? If not, I don't have somebody presenting that motion. Representative Briner.
Madam Chair, would we need to amend one or the other, Section 4 or Section 5?
Yes.
So I move to amend Senate Section 5 by deleting 122A.71.
Okay. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. So the motion is adopted.
And then, now, Madam Chair, I'll move adoption of Senate Section 5, Article 8. Or Article 9.
Sorry. Yeah, Article 9. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. So then, Mr. Chair and members, what we have is a list of three items that are items that we are suggesting they are not part of really an offer. They have fiscal implication. So since they are moving, my sense is that we don't need to take action, since they, you know, we hope that they will be moving in the finance, the supplemental finance conversation. So I don't know if you have any input on that or. But it's a complicated issue for us to really think about moving forward pieces of legislation that actually need funding in order to be implemented.
Madam Chair, we concur with the Senate's thinking on this.
Thank you. So we need not to take action on that, right? Okay. So, members, this kind of concludes this part of what we would like to do for now. And there are two issues that are pending. One is related to MTLE, the other one to PSEO, in which the houses have very different opinions. And we would like to just have a brief conversation, because we need to come back to those two issues and have a perhaps some, I hope that we don't have extensive conversations, but we have some conversations. I know we have strong feelings about that language and have strong opinions about the language, and I think we want to give the members the opportunity to express those opinions and those understandings. So I believe it's very difficult. I think it's 5:20 right now,
yes.
Right? Representative Yorusu, do you have a comment or a question we'd like to ask before we break for a few minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to remind you that you had those issues in the ELL part that had to do with the fiscal implications that the two of you were going to discuss.
That is correct. You know, we moved those particular provisions already. So Representative Mariani and I are in contact right now with our finance chairs to try to figure out what to do with that. And so we probably will come back, but you're correct. Those are a couple of issues that we already moved here, and we're going to have to figure out how to move them back if we need to or not move them back. But thank you for the reminder, Representative.
And Madam Chair, actually one of those sections does not have a fiscal implication. We thought they did. We yoked them together. It's really the Section 34, I believe.
That would be the assessment, correct?
Yes, the assessment.
So is the assessment. One of the issues, I don't know if you recall, of course all of our members are in the policy committee. We moved that language in policy without the fiscal provisions, and then the fiscal provisions got attached, but they can technically get detached without us taking any action, because we did not move those particular provisions in policy anyway. So that's where those two things kind of become complicated. I mean, they can, if they don't pass them, they will not affect the policy decision that we made here. So that's a pure fiscal decision, and we have to take no action on that. Any other questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a, I just need an update on R2-A6. I don't recall us discussing on the Senate side Section 4. Did we adopt that? That's the report that's required regarding the Early Learning Scholarship Program to evaluate the effectiveness. Are we ready? How many recipients? What's the size of the scholarship? Did we talk about that? All that. What's the last item?
So is
item
it was
there?
One of the list.
Thank you,
Senator. So that's yeah. So apparently that's those are the three issues that we. And again, there was an issue with another report from Senator Sieben, but that was not part of policy. It's not listed, but these particular three are listed because they have fiscal implication.
Thank you.
Senator Clausen. Well,
thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of information. We also had the teacher development evaluation fiscal piece. Should that be listed here just for the record or not?
Thank you. Ms. Larson.
Okay.
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Madam
You
Chair.
Both went.
The language in this, in our side-by-side, does not have any fiscal component. The fiscal component is in the Senate supplemental bill.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. So there are some pieces that are kind of complicated. Again, that piece, Senator, moved in fiscal. It was just an appropriation, so the language was taken care of. Any other questions, any issues pending, any concerns that you would like to share before we take a half-hour break, and those who wish to have tea or dinner may do so. We may come back for a long discussion.
Madam Chair, as soon as I retire... As soon as I retire, I'm going to open up a quality dinner place in the capital because we all have to travel a distance to get something other than cold sandwiches.
That is true. That is true. So we might just gather with our members and order something. But so it's 5:25, and we are going to reconvene at 6 p.m. Good. So we'll take a short break. So let's call our meeting back to order. So, Mr. Chair and members, what we had a good opportunity to really talk about a couple of issues that are very dear to us and very dear to you, and we've worked on it. Members have worked on it for some time now, a couple of years, for Senator Dahl and Representative Yaruso. And we totally appreciate what you've done because, as I recall, in our committee, there were a couple of very compelling two issues that put me in a very sensitive place, and one was the Safe Schools Act and hearing the testimony of many parents who've lost their kids, and that was very, very difficult for me to hear and not to really share some tears with those parents. And this one, because we had a lot of teachers who have done outstanding work and they felt that it was so unfair that they couldn't continue to do what they love and that they couldn't continue to work with their kids. So it was very moving testimony, and I think that resolving those issues was very significant and is going to be very significant. So I am not taking this lightly. This is a huge issue for those of us who care about education and our kids. So we have differences of opinion, but I think that there is one thing that connects us in a very meaningful way, and that's our passion for kids and to do the best that we can do for our kids. So what we have, Mr. Chair and members, is that we are willing to look into the language that is being offered by the House, but we have an amendment that is being prepared by one of our members, and we would like to offer that amendment in order to kind of bring a conversation briefly about an issue that was very important. That was kind of what I think kind of a foundation piece about a difference of opinion. And I wish we would have had more time to talk about really what is that we do, how we invest in teacher preparation. It was a longer conversation I wanted to have, but we needed to address this because there are thousands of people out there who really need to have a resolution, and we couldn't continue to talk about some creative ideas. So with that, we are prepared to look into, to accept the proposed language from the House, and then look into offering an amendment. If you could just kind of start that conversation now.
Thank you.
So, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think all of us here know how important education is, and we also have a passion, and we know that a teacher, when we talk about the in-school variable that's tied closely with student achievement, well, the first correlation, of course, is the mother's educational level is the strongest correlation to student achievement. But we don't control that, but we do control what happens in our schools, or we have some measure of control what happens in our schools. And we know that the teacher, the quality of the teacher or the effectiveness of the teacher is the strongest in-school variable that we have when it comes to student achievement. And that's why I think this particular section of the bill on R7, Article 3, which had to do with our teachers, getting the best and brightest teachers in front of our students, is so important to everyone at this table. And we've spent a lot of time visiting about it. And on the Senate side, I particularly want to thank Senator Torres Ray for her patience and also the dialogue that she not only allowed but encouraged as we addressed this really important issue. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment. And I don't know that I have an amendment number. I have some language, but perhaps Ms. Butler might want to read that language for the committee.
Madam Chair, members, if you turn to R7, page R7-A3, looking up on the House language side, line 65.13, the first part of the amendment would be strike the word pass and insert the word take. So that the board must adopt rules requiring a person to take a skills examination. And then on line 65.14, after the word mathematics, insert and pass the skills examination. And then the rest of the line and paragraph would read the same. Just to let members know, there's also another place where that same, or two more places, I believe, that same amendment would need to be made or paralleled, because there's another section that has the skills examination requirement that's in Section 13 of the House file on R9, as well as there's that requirement for applicants licensed in other states, which is in Section 14 of the House file with the operative language on R12.
Thank you. Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Ms. Butler. And the purpose of this amendment is to get to the – it kind of lets us have our cake and eat it, too. In other words, it says that, yes, everyone, all of our prospective teachers are going to take this basic skills test and pass, or if they don't pass, that's where we get to eat our cake as well as have it, or then they may take the alternatives here that the House language has detailed out regarding the ACT plus writing or the SAT and having a score as determined by the board. And we know that the ACT and the SAT are not the same as a basic skills test. That is a college readiness test. That's what it is. And yet we're not talking about students that are ready for college. We're talking about students that are ready for, or students that are ready to be teachers in our classrooms. So they're not the same. We should not confuse that the basic skills is the same as the ACT or the SAT, because it's not. However, by including the fact that all will take the basic skills test and pass, and then including the OR and this other alternative, which isn't a basic skills test, what that does is it allows us to not have teachers who have graduated in this limbo where we have right now, teachers who have graduated, have their degrees, but maybe for some reason haven't passed one of the basic skills tests. So it kind of eliminates that portion. The other thing that it does, by having all prospective teachers take the basic skills test, it's going to give us the information that can help us going forward, getting to the position that we have talked about significantly in the Senate, and I suppose the House has too, and the real issue is looking at our teacher preparation programs. And are our teacher preparation programs preparing the teachers that are needed in today's classrooms? So this amendment is a small effort to try and have our cake and eat it too, and at the same time really help us ensure that we have these basic skills. We have confidence that our teachers have these basic skills, or something that is somewhat of an equivalent. It isn't. People that know testing will tell you it's not an equivalent, and it's not. But it at least helps us out of this issue where we have the teachers who have not been able to get there, who have been able to pass the test. But more importantly, I think it will also give us information that's going to be helpful going forward in trying to better assess our teacher preparation programs.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Representative Mariani and Representative Arnold.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I want to go back and make sure I have the construct of the amendment correct. And then I do want to make a couple of just very quick comments and maybe some questions. So as I understand it, the amendment would replace on line 6513 the word pass with take, and then on the next line, on line 0.14, after the word and, insert pass the skills exam in mathematics. So that remains mathematics. And then there's no other change offered. I mean, that's it. Yep. So, okay, so then, so I have that right. Okay, yes. Very well, thank you. Well, so first of all, Senator Nelson, I appreciate the spirit in which you've offered, offered to meet the House on this provision, and frankly, you know, members who have been here, even just the last couple of years know that both houses and both caucuses have struggled with this issue. And struggle isn't the right word, actually. The better word is that both bodies and both caucuses and both bodies have been in search for something better than what we currently have. I think it's irrefutable by the fact that we've had bills introduced both by Republicans and Democrats offering all sorts of alternative approaches to what's currently in statute. And so I just want to dispel publicly that, you know, the issue before us is not that one body doesn't think that there isn't an issue to be resolved and the other does, or that one caucus doesn't think that there. I think if there's agreement, it's agreement that there's an issue to be resolved. And I think the evidence speaks for itself in terms of the legislation that has been introduced in terms of bills and amendments. And quite frankly, a lot of very creative approaches. In the House, what we basically did is we took a Representative Sandra Erickson approach with a modification, albeit, but basically using Representative Erickson's, what we think was a very good identification of the worthiness of the ACT-SAT in regards to basic skills. And so if I'm going to differ with you a little bit, Representative Nelson, it's just to correct, from my opinion, Senator Nelson, it's to correct, from my opinion, that the statement of basic skills test signals a readiness to be a teacher. I would offer a important variation on that, and that is to say that there's lots of things that would make that, constitute that. But relative to the tests in front of us, you know, there are pedagogy tests and content tests. So we're only talking about one element of a multi-element testing frame. And the history of the basic skills, what we call the basic skills test, was that it was never, well, it wasn't originally meant to be the licensing exiting exam. It was meant and constructed to be an entrance for teacher candidates to be able to pursue that particular career. And so I don't think that it's accurate to say that an ACT or an SAT is not an indication of a readiness to be a teacher. I would argue that the basic skills test has not proven itself to be a readiness to be a teacher. Certainly the pedagogy test and the content test and everything else has, I believe, borne that out, and I don't think anyone's arguing, you know, that point. The ACT, SAT exam, as Representative Sandra Erickson identified, is a high-value, rigorous, nationally normed college entrance exam. It, in fact, is basic. In Minnesota, what that means, frankly, is, and we'll get there, you know, that it's at the very least crosswalking with Algebra 1, and we'll probably need to crosswalk with Algebra 2 pretty soon because we're teeing that up. And so I do think that we do have a, and frankly, we're not greatly disagreeing here, Senator Nelson, because you're leaving the ACT and SAT, you know, component there. We're not talking about a situation where the ACT, SAT is something less than whatever this basic skills test is. The reason I asked about the construction is that, and I want to hear from other members here, is that if we were to adopt this, then a candidate would then still have a choice of either taking the basic skills test, demonstrating a passing of the math, in particular on that test. In other words, they may not pass the reading or writing, but if they pass the math, then that's good enough. Or they could dispense with taking the basic skills at all and just, you know, go with the house option of having this range performance inside the ACT, SAT. I just want to clarify. I want to make sure that's the intent and et cetera.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Mariani, I appreciate your comments, and I do want to clarify one thing. I do not believe that any of the tests actually say that someone's going to be a good teacher. And my comment was merely that the ACT test is designed it's a college entrance test, not a test to see if we have a prepared teacher. That was my comment. I did not say that either one are the measure of the teacher effectiveness. So I want to be really clear about that. I'm just saying that ACT is designed for college entrance, and our teacher preparatory licensing tests are designed in somewhat to see if someone is ready to be a teacher. If there's a different level there. One is, are you ready coming out of high school to be successful in college? And another is there any indication that coming out of college you're prepared to be somewhat successful in the classroom? But we know, especially those of us who are in education, that there's much more to education than a test. In fact, we know tests are a snapshot in time. That's what they are. But that doesn't mean that they're not valuable or that... And especially when we're the designing force, when we design what those basic skills tests are in the state of Minnesota, we're the ones who are saying these are the things that are important, that we know that all teachers, these are skills that all teachers possess. And so that's our ability to determine what those basic skills tests are. Now, regarding the construction, the intent is, yes, that all teacher candidates take the basic skills test and pass the basic skills test. However, that's they all do. However, or if they do not pass, then there is another avenue, which is all the things that the House has so diligently described here, which is the ACT, the SAT. And the reason I said that they're not the same, because we can call up, I think we have some testing professionals in the room who, you know, we won't call them up at this late because we've all, you know, probably heard and discussed.
I think we had enough discussion, so we're going to give Representative Ertl and Representative Mariani and Representative Yaruso a chance to talk. Representative Ertl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have a question and a comment. First, the question, and maybe Senator Nelson or someone else can answer. Are the MTLE scores readily available to school districts when they are hiring?
I understand.
Anyone know that?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, when they are hiring.
When they're hiring. Are the scores that are received by a teacher, a student, made readily available to schools?
Senator Clausen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Fortunately, I've had an opportunity to hire a lot of great teachers. I've never gotten those scores. It's just that they have passed the requirements. But an actual score, no.
The actual score is not revealed. It's just that they pass or didn't pass.
All right. Well, thank you. Then, Madam Chair, my comments. Thank you. I think that, this is a good step moving us down the line on this. This has been a very perplexing problem over the years. I've offered legislation as well on it. I worked with Representative Yaruso on this, and I think this brings us closer, at least for some people, to solving what is a very hard situation for them. The comments about what determines readiness to be a teacher. I don't know if there is a time or a certain test that determines readiness. I mean, from my personal experience, believed when I started teaching that I was really, really good. And then looking back after about 5 to 10 years of teaching, I thought, boy, I didn't know very much then. That I wasn't as ready as I should have been when I started. And that's part of the legislation that we have in this bill, establishing the pilot student teaching program. I think that in a school year of student teaching, you can learn more and become more ready to teach than in 10 weeks. And what I want to look at more for next year are more things that we can do to better prepare teachers for the classroom. And what I have said frequently to our House Committee, and for those in the audience who have also heard me say this, you senators feel left out, so I'll say it for you. And that is that the test is just a test. It doesn't really tell you if you're going to be a good teacher. What we have to do is examine more closely the process that leads to the taking the test, the process that leads to preparing the teacher.
That's right.
And those are the things that I think we need to focus on in the future. So with that, I do support this amendment, and I do support this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you want to call it and some others, but I just want to – I'm actually trying to be helpful here, Senator, in terms of your construct, and that's why I asked, because what you describe is not how your amendment is constructed. If you wanted to accomplish what you want to do, I think you would need to actually say you either upon not passing, something like upon not passing the math skills, then you would have the option to do this. Because otherwise, your construct just says pick choice A or pick choice B. And that's why it's kind of intriguing to me. I do think that making the basic skills a math test probably defeats whatever the basic skill is supposed to be. There are, Representative Ertl, you had a someone that you brought in who's an art instructor who, in fact, struggled with the math component.
I just wanted to put a comment.
Oh, was it reading? Okay. Yeah. Well, someone else came and struggled with the math. But anyway, I'm just trying to be helpful to you, Senator Nelson, to make sure that we fully debate and vote on what you stated your intent is here.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Chair Mariani, for the opportunity to clarify that. I greatly appreciate that. I worked with counsel to try and get the language correct, but it sounds like we may have missed a comma somewhere is where I'm guessing. But I'm going to refer to Ms. Butler to help us get the language exactly conform to the intent and also what we're discussing today. So thank you, Chair Mariani.
I think she should be able to. I think a member should be able to vote on whatever they want to have us vote on.
Yes. So. Thank you, Chair Mariani. So maybe.
I may not be supportive of it, depending on what. But
I think so would you like to get.
Yes.
Our staff to offer.
Yes, I would like either one of our counsel to offer the correct language for the intent that we've discussed here.
So why don't we ask Ms. Butler and Ms. Larson to, or you have it.
She has a suggestion.
Ms. Larson has a suggestion. Okay, go for it.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson.
Nelson. If I understand your intent correctly, what you're seeking to do is to obligate everyone to take the skills exam. And only after taking and not passing the skills exam do these other options become available. Is that correct?
Madam Chair? Mr. Chair?
What I am.
Correct.
Okay.
That's the exact intent. Thank you so much.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, what I would suggest on R7A3, on the House side, 65.14, after the word or, insert, if the person takes and does not pass the skills exam, comma. So I would not make the amendment on 65.13, but on 65.14, after or, insert, comma, if the person takes and does not pass the skills exam, comma, and then go forward.
Although you don't have the math component in there.
Well, no.
I don't think the math was an issue. Okay.
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, it's not. I'm not pulling out the math or anything. It's just, and the reason I would like all to take the basic skills test that we design at the state level. We determine what it is that we think those basic skills are, whatever they are, that are necessary. I think it will. And that can change, of course, whatever those specific basic skills tests would be. But I think what that does is it's going to help give us some information that's going to help us determine how many teachers are prepared to do whatever it is that we say we think is important before a teacher goes into a classroom. And so I think it's helpful going forward, maybe even getting to what Representative Erdahl spoke about, which is doing a better job or maybe having a better understanding of our teacher preparation programs and how they are preparing teachers and are they preparing teachers or if they're not in some area, what area are they weak in? And I think it will just be good information for us to have as we go forward in hopefully next session, looking at these, making sure that we are developing 21st century teachers. So thank you for that clarification. And so that would be my amendment.
Representative Russo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would oppose this amendment, and I want to look at it in a couple of different ways. First of all, in order to talk about it, we kind of have to take at face value the idea that we, you know, I mean, we have in statute that we have to have the skills exam. I take issue with the idea that it tells us how well, anything about how well our preparation programs are preparing our people to be teachers, because the content of these tests has nothing to do with what that preparation is in those programs, and it's really totally about testing what has come before in a person's education. But I'd like to look at it from two points of view. Does it do good, and does it do harm to the process? And first of all, with respect to whether we're going to get information from it, I think that it might actually hinder getting accurate information, because if I am the person going in and I know that I've got really good ACT scores or something, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to take this test that I know I don't have to do something on, that will have an impact on the scores that come out of it. In a similar way to that, we sometimes have that same problem with kids in school when they take some of their MCAs or whatever. If they know that, you know, they're not there, then nobody's going to do anything to them. That's always an issue. When you make somebody take a test, that then doesn't count. So I fear that you will actually muck up your statistics if you do that, with an eye to getting that information out of it. And so for the person who's already going in with an adequate score on the ACT or the SAT, that test isn't going to do them any good. And I really fear that it really isn't going to do us any good either, because we can't rely on the validity of the information we would get out of it. With regard to the content, I absolutely would not be offering this alternative if I saw this as a lower class alternative, as a second class alternative. I would not do that, because like you, all of you, I want to have well-educated, high-quality teachers in the classroom. And if we're going to have the skills test, it needs to be a good skills test. And I absolutely don't see this as a second-class alternative. And the issue of the level of it came up. And I'm not sure if you're aware. For example, on the math, the level on the MTLE basic skills math test is a little bit difficult to determine the ins and outs and details of it. But the overall level is that it goes through algebra 2, through quadratic equations and some linear equations. And then it has geometry through planar geometry and angles and whatnot, just on a comparative level. The ACT does all of that, but it does algebra 2 through trigonometry. So the level is actually higher on the ACT, and that's one of the reasons we made it a composite score. However, the other huge difference between the two is the quality of the preparation materials and the accountability that are available. The ACT, because of the fact that it's a national test and a long-standing test, and there's been millions of dollars, I'm sure, put into the development of it, I stopped at Barnes & Noble last week to see if I could get a printout of the variety of ACT prep materials that are available. I'm just saying ACT, but SAT, just add SAT to everything I say. And I asked them if I could get a printout. And before I did, I explained exactly why I wanted this printout, and that's part of the rest of the story here. Well, we couldn't, because his screen would only show him 125 at a time, and it was going to run 15 pages because they don't have just the titles. They've got all the publisher information and all of that. And so we did not succeed. But the rest of the story is that while I explained, I said, I am a legislator. I am working on an alternative to the MTLE. And when that word was out of my mouth, this random clerk at Barnes & Noble said, oh, that. Because he has people come all the time looking for preparation materials, and they don't have them because you can only get them from Pearson. So there's an offset. The actual level of the test is a bit higher in scope on the ACT, or the SAT is even higher than the ACT, although they're morphing that a little now. But it's more accessible for the student. I don't mean easier for the student, but it's more accessible for the student. So there's a trade-off between the two. And that's, you know, they're equivalent because of that. One is not second class to the other one. They're meant to be true alternatives for the person that's going to take the test. And the level is high enough that the Board of Teaching, in setting the score, will be setting what it is we're expecting of people. You know, we're leaving this determining of what that should be up to them. And if anybody's familiar with you know, with your own kids or when you took it, if we can, some of us remember back that far. And I happen to tutor people in all of these tests. There's a really wide range on, you know, people's achievement on that and what it means and how prepared they are in various things. So I oppose the idea of setting this up as a second-class alternative. I would not offer it as a second-class alternative. And then we come to, I already mentioned the potential harm in the statistics on our own test, but you happen to use a phrase. I'm not trying to pick on the wording you use, but you used a phrase that happened to set up an analogy for me that lets us have our cake and eat it too. Now, I am gluten intolerant. Okay? And I go to countless banquets. And I don't get dessert, okay? Unless, you know, they have an alternative. So if you have your banquet and you have dessert, I can't have your cake. Okay? I got to have some fruit or something, right? And that's okay, because frankly, they usually bend over backward and I get this huge pile of fruit, and that's okay. But if you make me pay for your cake, I'm really not going to be very happy. And if we make our students pay for this test, if they know they don't need it to get their license, I don't think that's fair. And we're going to make them, now if we paid for their cake, that'd be, you know, maybe we could do that. We could pay for their cake and then we could use the, you know, but they can't taste test it for us if they're gluten-free. But, you know, that wouldn't be so bad. If we were paying for that test for them to take it, then we could have them take it for the sake of us getting the data, and that would be fair. But I don't think it's fair for them to pay for our data. That just doesn't work for me. So I for those reasons, I oppose the amendment.
I could listen to you for a little bit longer, Representative Urizen. And I so appreciate something that you said with respect to the issue that we never contemplated and never asked Pearson or anybody to figure out a plan to prepare. And, you know, the many teachers that I know that are in the immersion schools constantly, they feel so prepared. Many of them have high degrees. And they want to be prepared, and they want to pass this test, and they know that it's a language issue. And they feel like, where do I go? And I even will pay whatever it takes to prepare, and they have nowhere to go. So that's an issue I have heard a lot. So I'm going to let you do a kind of a brief comment, but I have Senator Dahl, Representative Briner, and Senator Nelson wanting to talk again. I guess I skipped you. Sorry.
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So one more.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you mentioned people being willing to pay. If we pass this, I will lose hundreds of dollars because I won't have those students coming to me anymore.
Right. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure we're ready to vote shortly. But but I am opposed to the amendment, and I... You know, Representative Urizen and I both served on the task force that was directed by legislature last year. And their recommendation, and there's 15 to 20 of very intelligent people representing higher ed, classroom teachers, superintendents, principals, MDE, Board of Teaching, and the recommendation by overwhelming majority was to scrap the MTLE. And so I thought the work of the committee was good work. And so I don't believe that the test is good for all the reasons that Representative Mariani or Urizen have mentioned so well. So I am going to be voting no on that. I also, you know, we all have embraced the language regarding immersion, foreign language teachers, but yet we don't consider maybe the people that have learning disabilities that want to teach, whether it's with dyslexia or some other learning disabilities. And those people are also being left out, even though they have great passion and great skills for the teaching profession in many instances. And lastly, in regard to giving direction to the higher ed institutes that prepare our teachers, and that was talked about quite a bit. Many people's position on the task force said, well, you know, you're really questioning our ability to you know, or an accredited program to put out good teachers. So I think we do have to make sure that they are putting out teachers that are prepared to get into the classroom. There is a little bit of, I think, comfort language on 66.8 to 66.12 in existing statute on page R7A3. So the board must provide the leadership and adopt rules for the redesign of teacher education programs to implement a research-based, results-oriented curriculum that focuses on the skills teachers need in order to be effective. The board shall implement new systems of teacher preparation program evaluation to assure program effectiveness based on proficiency of graduates and demonstrating attainment of program outcomes. So I think we should hold them to that as we move forward and make sure, indeed, we have the best teachers in front of our classroom. But I will be voting no on this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Clausen. I think that's an important point, that we have a lot of good policy that we really need to review in terms of implementation, you know, what is happening out there. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not supportive of the amendment, but that's not why I asked for an opportunity to speak. My main concern is in this discussion about whether we should look in terms of the failure rates of the MTLE at particular qualities of our teacher preparation programs. I think we're framing that question far too narrowly, and because I won't be around to participate in the next level of the discussion, I just want to pass along a few thoughts for consideration. In our own approach to K-12, we've talked about multiple measures for a number of years, not taking one test at one moment in time as a measure of the success of the student or the school. That we need to get a 360 view and take into account other measures that give us information about that person or that entity. I think that we need to do the same thing here. First of all, the psychometric properties of this test are in question. That's one of the reasons that it stands out compared to the pedagogy and the content test. The results are different. So the fact that those properties are being questioned raises a question about its place as one of those measures. But also, we shouldn't give it more weight than it deserves in terms of other measures of whether we have a successful school. And I'm going to mention at least one that's not a part of this legislation, and that's the TPA, the Teacher Performance Assessment, which actually does look at the student from a 360 angle. You know, students have to do writing and analysis and lesson planning, and they present, and they're videotaped, and they're analyzed in their teaching qualities. So I think to look at some of these other measures in relation to a teacher preparation program to see if successful teachers are being produced would give us a better reflection on whether indeed the MTLE is a fair assessment or does fairly represent the quality of those programs. So I just wanted to put that out there to add to the quality of reflection you might carry forward from here.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think we've had a very thoughtful discussion, and there's a lot to think of, and I took a lot of notes, actually, because I thought it was all insightful information. And I will say that I do believe if somebody pays for something, they will take it seriously. And I would say also that I know teachers, and believe me, teachers take schooling and tests seriously. So I don't believe for one minute that any teacher would say this test is unimportant, I'm going to muck up the results, and we're going to end up with mucked up statistics. But I would say that even if there was some thought to that, some statistics are better than none. And without having any sort of a basic framework, which, by the way, we determine at the state level, we determine what that basic skills are, what those basic skills are, without having any basic, this is the basic knowledge that's needed, and without having that, then we don't have a baseline. And I don't for one minute advocate that is the be-all and end-all. We know it's not, but it is one of those multiple measures that could be helpful. We know that if we have teachers in the state of Minnesota, they're going to be able to read at a sixth grade level, or whatever it is that we choose to put in this basic skills test that we design at the state level.
And there was one thing I didn't mention, and that had to do with the availability of resources to study and prepare for a test. And I think that's a legitimate concern. I've taken a lot of tests, not just for my education, but for my insurance, my financial licenses. And I know I needed to get those test preparation materials, and I'll tell you what, I studied them hard. And but it doesn't really matter if it's the Pearson test prep study or if it's the ACT test prep. But having materials to study and test prep, I think, is very important. Although we would hope that if we've adequately designed the basic skills test so that it literally does measure just those basic skills that we would want our child's teacher to have in the classroom, or our grandchild's teacher to have in the classroom, that those materials would perhaps not be necessary. But we all like to prepare for tests, especially teachers. And so I think that I think that this is a very small accommodation to address an issue that has kind of had this legislature. We've kind of been at wit's end to determine how to best do that. And so with that, Madam Chair, I would like to ask for a roll call. I think it's an incredibly important issue. I know that we want to make sure that and the thing that I have a hard time with is we control all the variables, and yet we're still not willing to say that we have this very basic level of competency that's needed. It's not that it's some test that is just we have no control over. We actually determine what that basic skills test is. And I do know in this case, the testing company that we've selected, Pearson, will rewrite any test in any way that Minnesota wants. So whatever, you know, Minnesota determines, there's that very basic level of competency that we expect out of our teachers. Pearson will rewrite that test.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. So a roll call has been requested. And for the record, I would like to say that I wish we had enough time to really dive into a conversation about investing in teachers and elevating the teaching profession and getting rid of these tests altogether. So that's what it is for me. I wish we haven't had to have this conversation. I'm going to support this amendment because we either go test and do all the thing or just do nothing. And my preference was to do nothing. But now we're in a place where, you know, we're saying something that is half the way. And I don't support that. I wish we have gotten rid of this. And I wish that we have had enough political support to do that. I think this issue has been framed in a way that it is politically untenable. And it is against teachers, in my view. And this is not about basic skills. This is more than that. And having said that, we're going to take the roll.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Yes.
Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Breinert.
No.
Representative Yaruso.
No.
Representative Sawatsky. Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
There being five yes and six no's, with only one vote in a house, in one of the houses, the amendment fails.
I'm sure.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would move to adopt the House MTOV provisions in Article 3, Sections 12, 13, 14.
I'll ask for a roll call on that, too, please.
Madam Chair, I'd like to speak to it very briefly.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to belabor this. I just want to state for the record that by adopting House Article 3, Sections 12, 13, and 14, what we have on the table is an ongoing expectation in a measured, quantified way that the public will be assured that there is indeed a basic level of competency that will continue to be a requirement on the part of teacher candidates to demonstrate. It is beyond my thinking that anyone would argue the ACT and SAT, which is a nationally normed, high rigorous state test, which is now part of our total expectation for a college, or a career and college readiness rigorous standard, not only in our state, but increasingly across the country, that cannot be thought of, that would be thought of as anything less than a basic skill competency framework. And so rest assured, members, that what we have in the House language, in addition to the ACT, is the continued ability for teacher candidates, and I do agree with you, Senator Nelson and others, who do care about getting it right, who do care about wanting to demonstrate their professional worthiness and preparedness to teach, that they will exercise the appropriate examination measurement to be able to do that with confidence for themselves and for the public. I do not know of a single college teacher prep program in the state of Minnesota, perhaps in some other states, but certainly not in the state of Minnesota, that is producing teacher candidates with anything less than a sixth grade reading level to be teachers in the state of Minnesota. Let's be real clear about that. That's not happening. That's never happened. That will not happen in the state of Minnesota. Members, we have hundreds of candidates, and both caucuses have brought those individuals forward to testify in this committee, along with their school administrators, along with their colleagues who have testified after working side by side with these candidates for months, that they have the stuff, that they have what it takes to be able to be effective teachers in the classroom. But what they all have in common, those hundreds and hundreds of candidates, is that there's this thing called the basic skills test, and we repeatedly have said, what is that thing? No one really knows what that thing is, quite frankly. We know what the ACT, SAT measurements are. They can't get past that test, even though they do well on their pedagogy elements tests as well as their content tests. So, members, I think we have a really responsible approach here that maintains, first and foremost, it maintains the current basic skills test. And so if there's going to be an effort to calibrate and adjust that, then that will continue to be available for Minnesota. But we'll also offer this high-level, highly regarded, at the very least, basic skills examination. And Representative Russo already talked about how, in fact, when it comes to math, it's arguably even more rigorous than the basic skills test. There are some other provisions in these sections, including at the bottom of page. These pages always confuse me, Madam Chair. But the bottom of on lines 66.17 going forward, a direction to the board to design rules that create flexible, specialized teaching licenses, credentials, and other endorsement forms to increase students' participation in languages, immersion programs, world language instruction, career development opportunities, work-based learning, early college courses and careers, and so forth. So that's both not only the world language immersion, but it's also looking very forward, in a very prescriptive way, to be able to align teacher licensing expectations in our state with our evolving work over the last couple of years to really beef up the K-12 experience for our students in terms of being aligned to their career interests and aligned to the real-world needs that we have in the state of Minnesota. This is good progressive legislation. It's fair. It's just. I suspect that not all the candidates out there who have struggled with the basic skills will even be able to do this, so it's rigorous, but it certainly will be able to provide us with a meaningful, high-quality resolution to the issue that all parties in both houses have struggled with for many, many years. And so, members, I would urge your support of these sections.
Thank you, Representative. And I think those are good words to take our vote. And a roll call has been requested, and we'll take the roll.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Yes.
Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
No.
Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Breinert.
Yes.
Representative Urso.
Yes.
Representative Sawatsky.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Yes.
On a 9-1 vote, the motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next in the agenda, members, we have language that addresses sections 20 and 21, House Section 31. This is Senate Section 20 and 21, House Section 31. And I think that was, no, sorry, I have the wrong, we have three sections on PSEO. Yeah, I think that's it, right? I have three sections. They are all contained in those two. So what we hear is that both of these sections are, these three issues are very important to many constituencies, and that we in the Senate try hard to make sure that we put more accountability into the work that is done in the high schools. But we hear from many constituencies that higher ed needs to continue to do a better job, and that we need to make sure that they do, so the House has the language that addresses the responsibility of higher ed. The Senate has this, the language that addresses the responsibility of the high schools. And then we have a provision on veteran enrollment. So with that, the Senate is ready to support the inclusion of these three particular sections to address the responsibilities on both higher ed as well as high schools. And also make sure that I want to disclose really a concern that I had, a concern that some members had with respect to the responsibility that higher education institutions have with respect to working with families and then high school students really working, doing a better job of working with students and families to ensure that they have a plan in place. So with that, we need a motion to move those two particular sections. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we accept the Senate language in Article 3, Section 21, that we accept the House language in Article 3, Section 31.
Ms. Butler, yeah, we have the 20s not there. Yeah. So listed. So if you could correct that, please.
Madam Chair, members, there's two sections for the Senate, from the Senate file. But it's Article 2 of the Senate file, Sections 20 and 21.
Pardon me. Madam Chair, I'd like to amend my motion to include that Section 21 as well. That's my oversight.
Thank you. Senator. So with that, we move to be clear that we adopt Senate Section 20 and 21, House Section 31, only new language in paragraph B. Is that clear? Any questions?
Madam Chair?
Senator Nelson?
What about Subdivision 9, paragraph A? I moved that as well.
What page is that on?
That's R32, A3.
R31, you mean?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Oh, R3.
So,
excuse me.
It's a page R32, Article 3. So my motion included all of the House language in Section 31.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Senator, because the sheet that I have in here did not incorporate the conversation
thank
we just
you.
Had. So,
yes.
So we are the correct motion. It will incorporate the entire provision offered by the House, the entire provision offered
by the Senate. So he combines the two. So I want to make sure that we adopt the correct language. But what it does is that we will adopt both the language that is offered by the House and the language that is offered by the Senate, just to make it simpler. Mm-hmm. And the staff has this, right? So we're clear on that. Okay. On that motion, all of those in favor... Excuse me, Senator Johnson.
I have an amendment that I'd like to offer on the Senate language.
Senator Johnson, my apologies. I know you mentioned that. Please.
Do you want to amend the Nelson amendment?
Go ahead. So... We have language that is before us, and Senator Johnson will offer an amendment that will amend that language. So, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, in the Senate language on R31A3, in line 2125, line 2126, and Ms. Butler, if you could read it for me, please.
Thank you, Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, members, 21.26, after site, insert, and in materials that are distributed to families and students.
Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, I have a great concern about trying to inform parents and students about the advantages of participating in PSEO. And I have seen that the school districts really haven't provided as much information as I think they should. Generally, it's the children who have the super moms, generally. Now, there's super dads, too. But the super moms who are out looking around for every advantage that their children can gain, and I commend them. I think that's what we wish for every child to have. However, that is not the case. For instance, this is a brochure, or maybe it's a student handbook or whatever it might be, but it's information that this school passed out, and they don't even mention that the children are eligible in 10th grade. Now, that's been 3 years, right? Two or three years that's been in place. So, you know, to talk about letting people know that these programs are available, and that even though you may not be wealthy, you have the great interest in your children moving ahead as much as you can, and getting that college experience that we have heard and said that you are more likely to be successful in college if you have done some secondary education in your high school years. So that's why I'm putting that in there. It's I don't think it harms anybody. I think maybe the schools just need to be reminded how important it is to provide as much and accurate information as possible.
Thank you, Senator.
For your support.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Erdl, and then Senator Representative Erdl, and Representative Yours.
If you get confused, just the honorable is good.
Okay, honorables, go ahead.
He's quite comfortable with that.
I'm okay with that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And along those lines, I received a email from one of my constituents this morning, and I'll just read one paragraph of it for you that I think is relevant to this. Even though I realize PSEO isn't for everyone, I want every Minnesota high school student to know about this great program and opportunity waiting for them. It pains me to hear my classmates at St. Cloud State and even my high school to hear that them say, "I wish I had known about PSEO." Many students have shared with me that they had no idea of the existence of PSEO. Awareness needs to be made, and one step in creating this awareness is to allow colleges and universities to inform families about PSEO and the cost savings associated with participating in the program. I completely support allowing colleges and universities to share this information. Because of the financial implications of the PSEO program on high school funding, High schools are doing a very poor job of communicating with students of even the existence of this great program and the many benefits from utilization. It comes from a high school junior in my district.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for sharing that. Representative Urusa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, PSEO didn't exist when I was in school, but I remember when I went to the university and discovered that other people had had access to these things called CLEP tests. And it was the first I'd heard about it. And, you know, I don't know what I would have done, you know, which ones I might have taken or not taken or whatever, but, you know, it would have opened up some opportunities to take different electives, maybe, in some situations. It's not only about, you know, saving money or saving time. Sometimes it's about flexibility. So I'm really in favor of any efforts we can do to make sure that students are informed and can make good choices about all the options they've got.
Thank you, Representative Senator Nelson and Senator Clausen and Representative Moriani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, it's late, so I'm not going to read to you all the information that I'm passing out, but I do hope you take the opportunity to do so. And let me just mention two brief things. One, I appreciate Senator Johnson's amendment to my amendment. I think that makes it better, and the issue is making sure that parents and students know about this opportunity that they have in Minnesota. And the cost, the high cost of higher education is not a secret to anyone. We are concerned about this no matter where you look. And just last night I was looking at my Minnesota magazine, and, you know, lo and behold, here's an article about the price of knowledge. Student loans are saddling the young with historic debt. And I'll just tell you about the first paragraph. Roughly 37 million Americans carry debts from college for a total sum that now tops $1 trillion. Think how that's going to impact their earning and our economy. And I want you to pay particular attention to this line. It really hurts to read it. The situation in Minnesota isn't particularly rosy. The state is fourth in the nation in indebtedness from student loans, with the average debt of $31,500 that has risen almost 6% since 2011. And so I am very supportive of not only the Johnson amendment to my amendment, but also the House language that I hope we do adopt tonight regarding removing the financial gag rule on PSEO. I think it's our duty to do so, and I appreciate the willingness of those to put this language forward. And there's a great letter that's been passed out to you from the Growth and Justice and why it supports PSEO. There's another one from the Minnesota State College Student Association. I hope you might use that for your bedtime reading tonight. And lastly, there's a list that lists just the organizations that support removing the PSEO gag rule. The African American Leadership Forum, Center for School Change, EdVisions, EdEvolving Growth and Justice, Chicano Latino Affairs Councils, Hector Garcia, Migazee Communications, Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, Minnesota Business Partnership, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota State College Student Association, MNCAN, Organizing Apprentice Project. I had a couple more just come in today, and I hope that the Senate and the House Conference Committee will add their names to this list of supporters of removing the PSEO gag rule. I think we'll have students who thank us for years to come.
Thank you, Senator. If we could briefly just make sure that we focus, there is an amendment before us, so we need to adopt that. Senator Clausen, and then Representative Moriani. Senator Clausen.
Well, I hope, Madam Chair, that my comments are appropriate. I think I'd be amiss if I didn't speak up a little bit about the good side of this, because my experience as a former high school principal is a little bit different in that I think we did a good job of informing students. Senator Boniff and I, this past fall, we visited 22 college campuses around the state. At each one, we had a town meeting with students. And one of the questions I already asked, raise your hand if you earned college credit prior to coming to the university or college, and at least a fourth, if not more, of the hands shot up. Now, I know not all of them are post-secondary. Some were college in the schools. Some were international baccalaureate. Some were advanced placement. But it was really rewarding to see that. And I think also, if you look at the state budget, we're spending $31 million a year supporting students in PSEO. So we certainly do have students that are accessing that. I think it's also important to note that not all students are eligible to access that based upon their academic record, which I think is important. Also, about getting the word out, if you look at websites, University of Minnesota, under post-secondary, it says the tuition, the cost for tuition and required textbooks are subsidized by the state of Minnesota when it talks about PSEO. So there is information out there. Southwest State, the program allows students to take college courses tuition-free, saving both time and money on completing a college degree. Another example, the cost of all course tuition fees and required textbooks are covered under PSEOP. That's at Normandale Community College, and we can go on and on to some others. But so the word, I think, is out there. Sometimes are people accessing that? Do they have an awareness? I think we can do a better job, and I think that Senator Johnson's amendment is a good reminder to high schools around the state to do a better job. But also, I think in caucus, we've talked in the past, maybe from the Senate or from Minnesota Department of Education, we get a letter out to all high schools reminding them of their responsibilities in this area. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. We will follow up on that issue because I think it's very important. Representative Moriani.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And obviously, the motion involves moving the House provision, and we did take this provision up on the floor of the House. And we added it in a strong bipartisan manner there. I do want to say, though, and this isn't, to the issue, so I'll be very brief. One, I do want to remind myself and others that, this whole movement that we now know as PSEO, which is part of a bigger, movement, dates back to Governor Perpich. He was the one who put this on the table. And to some degree, he paid a pretty big price for having done that. But what he did do was, I think, also put on the table, beyond just the opportunity for students, which is important in, of itself, he put into motion a conversation that we're still having today, and that we've actually taken, in my opinion, big steps toward fulfilling out that sort of grander vision. And I would argue that the grander vision had more to was more than just providing a college campus and college coursework experience for high school students. It really was about expanding the level of rigor and what is possible for younger students relative to that rigor. And in the last few years, we've taken some pretty important steps toward doing that outside of the PSEO delivery system. It's my personal opinion that the PSEO delivery system will never be a universal way in which to provide that level of new rigor and opportunity universally. That's going to fall, and I think appropriately so, to our secondary schools especially. And I think what we're learning to our secondary schools in new types of arrangements and partnerships and work with our post-secondary institutions. And we started out our session last year in the policy committee by having that very conversation when we brought in the Irondale High School, which is only one of many high schools across the state that are really pushing down the road pretty strongly on this. There's a lot of bumps ahead for that. I think all of us are going to be called in the next, hopefully, in the next year and the following years to be able to smooth those bumps out so that we can, in fact, transform what a secondary school experience is for any Minnesota student in the state of Minnesota. Obviously, with this, in the meantime, there will be the ability to use this PSEO experience. I certainly support that. I do think that the issue of the cost for college We almost can't talk about this without talking about that. I mean, that's a big, big challenge for Minnesota families. PSEO certainly does unarguably help with that. It's not atypical nowadays for post-secondary entering freshmen to walk onto colleges already with a number of credits under their belt. Our society is changing in that way. Our expectations are changing. That's good, and the good thing is that our secondary, our K-12 system, is more fully embracing that as well. And so those early years of these battles between post-secondary and secondary, which is very unfortunate, in which the language before us reflects, you know, that tension, hopefully if we continue to push with this early college experience, we're going to put that to bed, and we're going to have a whole different education delivery system, which to some degree will make PSEL not even necessary, with the caveat that we still have to figure out a way to make post-secondary much more affordable than it currently is for all families. Anyway, I support the provision.
On that motion, Representative
Wright. I'll be really quick. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani said much of what was on my mind, and I'm fine with your amendment, Senator
Thank
Johnson.
You.
It's not an issue at all. Sure. And I don't want to speak against any provisions that are being put forward. I had issues on the House floor when this language was offered about advertising, and my concern is mainly not to put an inappropriate attention to, well, everyone should have the information about the opportunities for earning college credits. PSEO is one among many, you know, AP, college in the schools, concurrent enrollment, et cetera. And the real priority is what is appropriate for the student's learning needs, goals, objectives, visions, dreams. Every student doesn't belong in any one of those. So I just want to be sure when we put this out there that we hold our post-secondary institutions, that we watch what happens, and that we're post-secondary institutions aren't simply recruiting high school students to fill their roles, and that the students' needs are being met. That's what, you know, so we just need to keep our eye on that. This is what is in the best interest of the student, whether it's PSEO, staying in their own high school, AP, whatever it is. So just that's my
Thank
perspective.
You. Thank you, Representative. I think we need to take a
Very
vote.
Very short.
Very short, Senator, please.
Madam Chair and Representative
We all love
Biner.
PSEO.
I think the real, like, elephant in the room that isn't talked about is the money.
Yep.
And that is what's driving this.
True.
And,
sure.
You know, it doesn't seem, it seems to me that it should be up to the post-secondary institution to provide the information and encourage every person possible to consider this. Not just the people who have the super moms or super dads or older siblings that have figured it out and they know how to do it. I can't imagine that most of you don't know of a great proportion of the students in our schools that do not have the savvy or the help to know and find out about this stuff. If you think about Greater Minnesota, where broadband isn't even available all over, some of these kids that I hear have to go 5 miles to their friend's house that lives closer to access to computers. Well, we have to find a way for them to have the ability to know about this. And you can't help but know that the biggest reason that the people who are very savvy are doing this is because it's a way for them to save money for their family. And to give their children the opportunity to be successful in college. When I hear that statement, it makes me want to say that I think every child should maybe have an opportunity to take one class or be required to take one class at a college in order to give them an experience. I don't expect that to happen, believe me, but I really think when I hear those sorts of statistics come forward, why don't we do something about it? I mean, really take up something like that. So this is just a very small little thing, and I hope that the post-secondary institutions
get the message that they better start informing everybody about this, or there's going to be many of us who will be dissatisfied, and let the colleges do it.
Thank you. On Senator Johnson's motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Say something. This is interesting because this conversation was initiated by two 18-year-olds in the Senate. Ooh. And their names are Sam Petrov and Cherish Kovac. Actually, they invited me to a school board meeting. They were very frustrated with the fact that they were not told in the 10th grade that they could take PSEO and that they could take college credits. And so we started the conversation, and then we learned that a lot of people actually were looking into this. And it was really a very wonderful experience for me to learn that kids have a tremendous voice in the schools, and I am going to offer legislation next year to make sure that every school district has representation of students in their boards. Because these kids are kids that truly speak for their own needs and the needs of other kids. And so I'm going to work with them on that, and I've just started a good conversation with a group of students who are very excited about this possibility. So with that, we need a motion to move the PSEO language, both for Sections 20 and 21 and Section 31.
Senator Nelson. I do move that we adopt the Senate language on R31A3, that would be Section 20 and 21, and that we also adopt the House language on Article 3, page R32, Section 31 in its entirety. And I think I might have made that motion earlier, but I'm so glad to make it again.
Right. So on that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. We have one issue left. As you know, there was a conversation about fiscal notes attached to policy. And the chair and I have been trying to convince our finance chairs that the provision that was attached to ELL was separate from language. They were not convinced. They do not believe that the fiscal note is completely separate from the policy, and that it will present some confusion, and that they are not, they just don't want this blurry line to be out there pending, indicating that we adopted this decision, because they might have to open our bill in order to clarify that. And the chair and I are not willing to open this bill once you make a decision. So in order to clarify that those issues that are in finance are separate from the policy, and that we would like to move the policy forward, we need to put an amendment here. And I think the staff is ready to help us with that provision. So, Mr. Anderson, if you could
Madam Chair, maybe the proper motion might be to reconsider the previous motion that adopted Section 34 in House Article 3. Article 1. Correct.
Madam Chair. Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, before we make the motion, and the Chair is correct, we did have this conversation earlier today. We're in painful agreement to what we need to do here. But I just want to make sure we know what we're going to do. Is the intent to simply remove the entire Section 34, or to remove the part of Section 34 that triggers the fiscal implication? Because if you look at Section 34, the front part of it basically says the state of Minnesota must have a valid assessment measuring the pupil's English language proficiency for the purpose of being able to be identified as eligible for ELL services. And quite frankly, members, what we heard while we were putting this bill together is that the fact that we don't have an objective assessment possibly invites a federal justice inquiry under equal protection principles relative to this this category of students. So I think we want to be, we certainly want to assert our policy, our appropriate policy responsibilities to address this vitally important issue. We can do that without generating a fiscal note, is my opinion. So whether we reconsider and then amend the section and then vote it back in, or just simply amend the section now, which seems to me might be the simpler way to do it. But I defer to legal staff now that people have heard my, my concern.
So since we adopted this, we can do it either way. We can reconsider or we can simply put an amendment. Either way is the same effect, because we need to get the provision that speaks to the fiscal appropriation out. So either one will be fine. Senator Nelson.
Well, Madam Chair, I have two questions, kind of both a little bit process questions. One, this is one of the provisions that we talked about that have a financial impact. And so would we need to do this same type of moving or reconsidering for, I think there were three instances of potential financial impact? That's my first question. And then my second question is, I think, no? Okay, and then
excuse me.
Answer
Senator.
That first, please. Yes.
Yeah, we adopted this.
The instances that I refer to are, we took care of the other three. One was the Cale Harmon, the other one was the Katie Steven, and the other one was the report. So we already took care of that. Okay. There was a fourth that related to this, and we were in question as to whether or not we needed to remove that or not. And we've been trying to get an answer that we finally got an answer this afternoon, and the answer is this one too. So we're just trying to add this one to all of the fiscal, the list of fiscal issues that were in our bill.
Okay.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for clarifying that. So I do think it would make sense to treat this language just like we treated the others, whatever avenue we take for that. But then that does bring me to my second point, which is anyone who voted on the prevailing side can vote to reconsider. Is that right? Yes. Okay.
So let's, I think the staff has been working on this.
We
haven't closed that yet.
Okay.
So, the staff, Mr. Arnson,
Madam Chair, I believe that the totality of the changes in paragraph B, which begins on R54A1, all have some fiscal impact at the margin. So, for example, the stricken language and the new language between lines 23 and 32 have a slight negative impact on state appropriations. And, of course, the new language beginning with the word or in the judgment has a positive impact on state appropriations. So if the goal is to be fiscally neutral in the policy bill, I might suggest that the committee consider not adopting any of the stricken or new language in paragraph B.
Except the very first part, because we don't have this in paragraph B.
Oh.
Madam Chair, perhaps Ms. Larson can
Ms. Larson.
Share something on the record.
Mr. Chair, members, assuming that you proceed as Mr. Arnson is suggesting, one thing that I would recommend we not do on R54-A1 on the House side, 45.23, is remove the proposal to strike the beginning of that sentence, notwithstanding paragraph A, because paragraph A sets up the requirement for a valid assessment. So whenever we determine the
the EL qualifications, it's got to be consistent with the existence of a valid assessment, because we can't arbitrarily decide who is or is not an EL student.
Yeah, this is, now you understand, members, why this was very complicated, because we really needed to go back, and we were hoping that we wouldn't have to come back. We have a commitment to really support this, and so we move on that commitment, hoping that this will just get done. But we still know that we have a commitment to get it done, but we, for technical purposes, we just need to get it out. So I need a proper motion.
Well, Representative Moran. I'm trying to take a stab at it and ask staff to make sure. First of all, I think it's okay for us to just amend language that we've already incorporated into the bill, so we don't need to reconsider. I'm seeing nods of the head.
That's great.
And so then I think the proper motion based on what we just heard from staff would be to strike all the new language in paragraph B on lines 45.23 to 45.35, and this is in the House language. Well, it's in the bill. Except for the words on lines 0.23, notwithstanding paragraph A.
So it's deleted.
I'm sorry, Ms. Larson, please.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, is the point for paragraph B to delete all the new language and reinstate all the stricken language except the stricken language that appears on 45.23?
And Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, I think what we're hearing from staff interpretation is that by doing that, we have addressed all the elements that raise a fiscal point. So I want to make sure that that's correct. I know clearly the language on line 32 forward does. But I think what I'm hearing from Senate staff is that language, in the first part of that paragraph also generates a fiscal.
Madam Chair, it would generate a slight savings.
Oh. I don't think we need to worry about slight savings.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, if you were to adopt that language, you would have you would have fewer pupils on net eligible for EL aid. Madam Chair and committee members, current law sort of allows pupils to generate aid if they weren't enrolled in the school in the previous period during the testing window. The amended language, the language as you read on the page now, between lines 23 and 32, require the student to take the exam and not pass the exam in order to generate aid. So there is no freebie for the first year that they're enrolled.
Madam Chair, I must be getting late because I'm wrestling with this.
Mm-hmm. That's what made it so complicated for us to really deal with the financial piece. Senator Nuss.
Madam Chair, my understanding was on 45.23, notwithstanding paragraph, in other words, notwithstanding those first two words on 45.23, everything else would be stricken. In other words, current language would be current language. Stricken language here would be reinstated. And that's what I understand. So basically, this section would end at 45.23 after the second word, notwithstanding paragraph A, period. And then we would strike everything else because current language would stay the same until we hear from finance.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully then they will carry this paragraph in its entirety than over in the finance bill.
So we're just...
Is that your understanding?
All the new language and reinstating.
Okay, so... Language, so I was just being too cute to say, notwithstanding paragraph A.
We're going to keep that there. Because we don't want to know.
So you just have to play.
Yeah. Except not
standard paragraph A.
Keeping that stricken language.
But everything else is going back the way it was.
So it just disappears.
Everything disappears.
Okay, Representative.
Madam Chair.
Are you feeling now?
I think so.
Okay, let's get
so,
this.
Ms. Larson, maybe it'd be safer if you just repeat what you just told me.
Mr. Chairman, members, on R54A1, House language, on 45.23 to 45.35, the proposal is to delete all the new language and reinstate all the stricken language except the stricken language on 45.23.
So you got the old
right.
language.
Are we good?
So move.
Okay, so any questions on that motion from Representative Mariani? Not all of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed,
painfully aye.
Yeah, let's put that. I will add my name to that one. The motion is adopted. So I believe that we need to instruct the staff to move to help us put together the language and give them the authority to correct errors when I think there is a motion that we typically take in case we miss something in here in terms of moving it into the line that we didn't. So I would like to Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, I'm thinking we might need to have we I don't think we voted yet on the entire bill as amended.
True.
We need to
That's
do that.
What I was wondering.
That is true. That is true. Thank you.
Okay. So I will,
we're moving too fast.
So Madam Chair, I will move the entire bill. I don't have the bill number here as amended I guess I don't have to recommend passage, but I move the bill as amended.
Just a second, Senator. We want to make sure that we have.
And direct staff.
Yes, thank you.
One or not?
Direct staff to correct it.
And direct staff.
Yeah. So let's see if Senator. Okay, Peter.
So the motion would be to adopt the committee report as assembled by staff for adoption by the members.
There's the instruction.
Instruction. Could you say that, Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, I think Representative.
Madam Chair, I'll withdraw my motion and I'll let the staff restate that motion.
Okay.
So the motion is to direct staff to assemble the committee report as provisions have been adopted and amended for later adoption by the committee members.
And instruct them to correct any errors related to placement of language or sections. So we are directing you to do that because he'll come to the floor. Any representative?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, and then the next action for the members would be to sign that document. And we'll need the, I believe we'll need at least three members from each body to sign that document or for it to be considered. Adopted and presentable, you know, for to our respective bodies.
Okay. Senator
Chair,
Johnson?
Madam Chair, I would make that motion, the motion that was presented by staff.
Thank you. On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Members, thank you for your patience. Thank you for your time and your commitment to kids and to this incredible process. I'm very proud of having chaired this with a wonderful friend and wonderful friends, and we will continue to work on the pieces that are connected to the financial, fiscal end that have not been adopted here, but you have our commitment to work on those pieces. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members and staff.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, we will adjourn.
And staff.